I'm going to call this meeting of the Audit Committee to order. Can we have a roll call?
Chair Carter.
Here.
Vice Chair Del Carlo.
Here.
Regent Arriscada.
Here.
Regent Dubrava.
Here.
Regent Geddes.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
We do have a quorum.
Fantastic. We'll go on to item number one, public comment. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? I don't see any. Is there any public comment in Reno?
None in Reno, Chair Carter.
Is there any in Elko?
None in Elko, Chair Carter.
Very good. Thank you. We'll move on to item number two, minutes. I'd accept a motion for approval.
Move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We'll go on to item number three. We do have a Title IX issue. That's going to be item 23 on the main agenda, adjusting some of the Title IX policies we approved back, I believe that was last year. Also, just wanted to call your attention, so if you are not a person that loves huge reports, but you like Cliff Notes, there is that audit summary right there, and if you click on the audit summary button or the link, that has all the audits that we're going to be talking about today and the findings that are in there. With that, we'll move on to item number four, the Elkhorn Foundation Child Care Center, Chief Internal Auditor Joe Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury, Chief Internal Auditor. In the audit summary document you just referenced, there's the table of the four reports being presented today with the Cliff's Notes version. Before I get started, I just want to say thank you to the institutions and the offices with reports being presented today. As we strive toward something closer to normalcy, we've been able to complete a majority of these audits in a remote fashion, taking advantage of the technology we have and increasing our collaboration with the institutions to get these audits over the finish line. So thank you very much. This first audit up, Child Care Center at TMCC, I think is a great example of working with the institution to push it over the finish line. I won't go into the report verbatim, but in brief, we noted opportunities for control improvements surrounding cash controls, contract management, student employee documentation, and equipment inventory. Thank you.
I think some good suggestions and some good feedback from the institution. Do I have a motion for the acceptance of that report?
Make a motion.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. So we'll move on to item number five, change in leadership, and she, our Chief Internal Auditor. And could you just tell them what a change in leadership audit or what triggers that?
Absolutely. So this next audit, Joe Sunbury for the record, this next audit report is the change in leadership at NG. So for, as Chair Carter asked, for those members of the committee who may not have seen this type of audit before, just provide a little bit of background. Historically, when there's been a change in institution president, we would perform what's known back then as a presidential exit audit. And a few years ago, the committee asked that this be applied to, you know, various forms of key leaders around the system, most notably the chancellor position. So the idea behind these reviews, which came before my time, is really for the sake of the incoming leader, let's do a quick internal audit and review some standard areas so that he or she can be assured things are operating as intended, or we'll have an understanding of any areas that might need some attention. So, you know, in my opinion, this makes a lot of sense. In previous committee meetings, we've talked about how risk levels will inherently increase whenever you see a change in process, a change in system, or a change in people. So these audits historically include expenditures review, host, operating, travel, things like that, financial account review for deficit balances, review of legal action, contracts, equipment, that sort of thing. So with that background in mind, for this audit, we have what are hopefully a few useful control improvement suggestions surrounding contract management, monitoring of capital projects, and equipment inventory. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for the acceptance of this audit? Hello. Do I have a motion for the acceptance of this audit?
Motion to accept.
Very good. We have a motion. Do I have a second? Fantastic. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. We'll go on to item number 6, change in leadership, UNLV.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury, Chief Internal Auditor. You can just play the record back on what I just said. I won't go through all of that. Same concept, though. Although I will note that this is a pretty rare occurrence in that we don't have any material observations to share with the committee. Take this opportunity to remind the committee that, you know, these reports, we were providing reasonable assurance. Obviously, nothing is absolute, but we go through a sample selection process that's meant to be representative of the whole population, test accordingly. You know, we did have two audits going on simultaneously at UNLV, this one and the one that you'll see in Agenda Item 7. And I think regardless of what those deliverables look like, I think one of the best things an internal audit project can do is drive a lot of good discussion. And we were certainly appreciative of the discussions held at UNLV during this review, as well as the one I will tee up shortly. So thank you.
Do I have a motion for acceptance of item number 6?
Motion to accept.
Motion to accept. Do I have a second?
Second.
You can do it again. Any discussion? I will just say that...
Regent Carter, excuse me, sir.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Regent Riscato.
Mr. Sunbury, were there any surprises, any red flags, any sort of dollar amounts that didn't correspond or correlate with others in the past?
Joe Sunbury, for the record. No, they're really... in this particular case, there were, you know, this was a clean review, and... You know, my team, I think, you know, auditing in general, the internal audit profession has kind of evolved a bit. I think, you know, a decade or two ago, we probably would have just kept going until we found something, right, and tried to play that gotcha game. But in this case, in what we were looking at in our overall review, we were very, very comfortable and appreciated the chief business officer's help with performing an efficient audit. So, thank you.
I will say on my time as the board, I don't recall a single audit we've ever done that didn't have any findings whatsoever. So, you know, President Whitfield, I would definitely take that back to your staff. This doesn't happen in a vacuum. So, and that's phenomenal. Any other discussion? Item number 6. We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. We'll move on to item number 7, hosting UNLV Chief Internal Auditor Joe Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury. So the Board of Regents Handbook, Title 4, Chapter 10, Section 25, requires that internal audit test host expenses annually. The way we've satisfied that requirement in the past is to sample a given institution or two, typically annually, on a rotating basis. As deep a dive as these reviews can be, Regent Ariscato's point, these results are pretty consistent with institutions we've audited before. There are a handful of, I think, just a few transactions that were noted with an opportunity to improve on documentation, which is pretty common, but that error rate was somewhat minimal, less than 10%. So, thank you.
Thank you. Do I have a motion to accept?
I'll make a motion.
Second.
We have a motion second. And a second. Any discussion? We'll say thank you for adding the very colorful graph for Figure 1. I think that's informative. Hearing no further discussion, I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Number 7 passes. We'll move on to number 8, Internal Audit Department Work Plan and Status Report. Chief Internal Auditor, Joe Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury. Appreciate the committee's indulgence on this fairly large item. it was just over a year ago, I referenced the idea in the committee and I discussed moving our work plan and the discussions around those plans from away from a static one-year plan and start moving toward this sort of semi-annual plan idea. And this is in line with best practices from audit shops around the country, and it's just one more way for us to be agile and flexible in how we can perform for the system. So as I've stated in previous meetings, I think this approach is good for a few reasons. I want to give this committee as much of a real-time snapshot as to what we're planning to work on, what we are working on, and then monitoring those items that we've already worked on. So this document essentially follows that same logic. I'll point the committee to pages 3 and 4, which speak to the approach of how the plan was put together and the measures taken to ensure the plan builds in that agility and flexibility. It's important that as unforeseen but important projects come up throughout the year, we have that flexibility to provide resources in a somewhat timely fashion. It speaks to some highlights and themes, and again, I won't read those verbatim, but did want to touch again on the training aspect to show the committee the commitment from my team in terms of continuing education and staying current. A theme I've talked about for my internal audit team is relevance. I think if internal audit can be relevant, we're winning. And to stay relevant, you need internal, external training. So this number, compared to the prior 6 months, is a little bit higher. It represents over 8% of our hours versus 6% in the last six-month window. And that's because we're taking advantage of some cost-effective training through our finance department, as well as some workday credits that we look to take advantage of later this year. Happy to speak to any specifics in terms of themes. I think the bullet points listed are really at the core of what we've been trying to do for a while now, utilize feedback from our key stakeholders, focus on process and control improvement versus solely on transactional compliance. Collaboration continues to be important for us to work efficiently and effectively, and having frequent conversations with other assurance providers around the system is also critical. A few meetings ago, you heard from our trusty IT Audit Department of One. Hope to bring him back on a regular basis, just with some specific updates on that very important front. And again, you've heard me talk ad nauseum about cost savings that we continue to identify. So I will pause there before I move on to the next part of the report to see if there's any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Sunbury? Seeing none, you can continue.
Thank you. Joe Sunbury for the record. For those of you who have been on the committee for a few years now, page 7 is where you'll see some of our charts and graphs tracking open findings at the institutions. Again, I like to remind the committee whenever I can that this report a few years ago was pushing 200 pages. And based on feedback from this committee and some formatting efforts and removal of duplicative items, it's a much more digestible 50-ish page report. Still a lot, but it's a lot of information. Just a few highlights and discussion items. So on page 7, I love this graph. It's tracking our unresolved findings, and it now shows five-year trends. And you'll see that a few years ago, these unresolved items were really in the 20s or 30s, and in more recent periods, we've been able to shave that down to single digits and the teens in terms of unresolved items at the institutions. You'll notice a slight uptick from about a year and a half ago, where understandably we had some findings where the resolution needed to be delayed in a COVID environment. But that overall trend is a downward trajectory. And I think that's a combined effort of enhanced tracking by this committee, as well as the hard work from the institutions. I actually think next time I do this, I may include a 10-year graph because it'll be even more glaring. You can almost see when this committee started tracking, the numbers started looking a lot better. So, yeah, I think this is one of our more important metrics, number of open issues, number of past due issues, beyond just the general monitoring and accountability. It's also a strong indicator of management's buy-in and willingness to accept us and our recommendations. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll see on page 7 there, that graph. That is a huge accomplishment, and thank you all to the presidents and their institutions for reducing that amount. I mean, it was quite the report, a couple hundred pages, and you had to dig through to see what was open and unopened, and things were there for years, and it was quite crazy. However, if you're on page 8 and you're one of those institutions that has some findings there, we might be talking to you pretty soon. Okay, so that's for information only, correct? No, that's extra action. I'm sorry. So we do need a motion to approve the audit plan for next year.
Move to approve.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Are any opposed? Motion carries. We'll move on to item number 9, internal audit compliance and Title IX updates.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury, Chief Internal Auditor. So we introduced this section as a standing item to be able to provide departmental updates and, more importantly, have a placeholder to discuss risk. In the past, I've used this platform to update the Committee on Financial Aid-related findings, walk through updated risk assessment methodology, speak about what work Internal Audit was doing related to other board initiatives. So we have this agenda item sort of split into internal audit, compliance, and Title IX updates. So I've prepared my general remarks accordingly in those buckets. Given you've already heard me talk a lot about internal audit and the reports and the plan and whatnot, I will just add one last quick note to internal audit, and that is that our quality assurance review is finishing up. It's going on now and should finish up this month. And I really just wanted to express my appreciation to those who have been willing to participate in that process. They've really cast a fairly large net who they want to talk to around the system. And so thank you to those that have agreed to speak. And if you're hearing this now and you haven't been asked to speak, chances are you will. So stay tuned. Hopefully that proves to be a useful resource and a good process. And I look forward to sharing those results on any related recommendations that may come from it at our next meeting. It's always nice for internal audit to kind of turn the lens on itself. So in terms of compliance update, wanted to focus on the attached briefing memo, which provides some general background on our compliance hotline and incident management system with a bit of a refresher on how it came into existence. So this committee has seen similar updates in the past and wanted to keep it consistent with that. Also want to be responsive to any other questions we may get along the way. So before I get into any details or metrics, just wanted to take the committee through some additional background. The briefing memo references our charter updates, which is great. And all of this was in response to some requests by the board for potential ways to address concerns that were coming to their attention, right? And so Chief General Counsel Joe Reynolds presented this concept to utilize the chief internal auditor role as a bit of a clearinghouse so that, you know, as anyone affiliated with the system came across concerns, we'd have a mechanism or a process where those concerns could flow through my role, and that there could be some kind of informal triage group that reviews these items, and those could be referred to the appropriate party. So some kind of examples that he listed the day he presented this were referral to legal counsel, compliance, institution EEOC, institution presidents, outside agencies, or an internal audit investigation. So with that backdrop in mind, I wanted to fast forward to today, and within that briefing memo, you'll see information on what that initial review process looks like today and where some of those calls are going, so to speak. Again, I won't read it verbatim, but at its core, I think, you know, this really does two things. Number one, it's a way to provide some assurance that efforts are being made to get information to an appropriate resource, right? So that a student or an employee can get their concerned address and obtain the assistance that they're seeking. And number two, you know, we log and we track these items and can utilize our role as a monitoring function to ensure we're following up on a reasonably timely basis. In terms of metrics provided, if there are certain things you'd like to see in future updates, in terms of what we present, happy to take that feedback and grow with it. But consistent with the prior year update, we're talking about report volume, overall status of cases, where cases are being referred and where they're going within our institutions. So I will pause there to see if there's any questions. Thanks.
Any questions for Mr. Sunbury?
So the last bucket within this item is an update as it relates to Title IX, and Chair Carter referenced that there'll be an item on the board agenda related to that later in the board meeting. But just a timely update pursuant to Chief General Counsel Reynolds. So about 2 weeks ago, the U.S. Department of Education Office for Civil Rights issued a letter to students, educators, and other stakeholders regarding regulations implementing the Title IX amendments in 2020. The update noted that in late July, a federal district court found a section of the 2020 amendments, the live hearing requirement for the Title IX grievance process at post-secondary institutions, to be arbitrary and capricious, vacated that part of the provision, and remanded it to the department for further consideration. In summation, a decision maker at a post-secondary institution may now consider statements made by parties or witnesses that are otherwise permitted under the regulations, even if those parties or witnesses do not participate in cross-examination at the live hearing in reaching a determination regarding responsibility in the Title IX grievance process. I am obviously not a lawyer, but we do have one at the table if you have any other further questions on that front. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Sunbury? Seeing and hearing none, we will close out item 9 and move to item number 10, new business. Do we have any new business? Hearing and seeing none, we'll close out number 10. We'll go to 11, public comment. Do we have any public comment in Las Vegas? Don't see any. Do we have any public comment in Reno?
And in Reno, Chair Carter.
Do we have any public comment in Elko?
None in Elko, thank you.
This meeting's adjourned.